Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It is the 1st of April 2013 here in Japan, and today I'm joined on the line from the United States by Paul Glover, the founder of Ithaca Hours Local Currency and the author of many works, including Hometown Money, How to Enrich Your Community with Local Currency. He's available at paulglover.org, and that link will be in the show notes for this interview. So, Paul, thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Glad to be invited to talk with you.
Well, it's good to have you here. We've been talking about local community currencies on the program for a while now, so it's good to have someone who has had the experience of actually going through this, and quite a successful experience at that. For people who don't know about the Ithaca Hours local community currency, tell them a little bit about what that was and how it came to be.
Well, 22 years ago in Ithaca, New York, I noticed that a lot of people, friends particularly, had skills and time that were not being employed or respected by the prevailing economy. And while we had much desire to create things and trade them with each other and many services we could provide to each other, we didn't have the money. So, since I have a background in graphic design, journalism, and arrogance, I went to my computer and designed paper money for Ithaca, New York. Designed pretty colorful money, you know, with pictures of children, waterfalls, and trolley cars, and denominated in hours of labor. 1 hour note, half hour, quarter, eighth hour note, 2 hour note. And then began to issue to each of the pioneer traders who had agreed to be listed in the directory a specific starter amount. And the game began. An hour was worth has been worth an hour of basic labor, or 10 U.S. dollars, which at that time, 20 years ago, was double the minimum wage. People who usually expect more than $10 per hour of their service can charge multiple hours per hour, but the denomination puts between us as residents of our community that reminder that we are fellow citizens, not merely winners or losers scrambling for dollars. And it introduces us to each other on the basis of these skills and services that we have, that we are more proud to provide for each other than often is the case with a conventional job, just the stuff we have to do to get the money to pay the bills. So through that trading process, that more intimate scale process within the community, we're more easily able to become friends and lovers and political allies.
Well, it is an inspiring story, isn't it? It's an inspiring story, and tell people about how much money has circulated through this community. I mean, it's important for people to understand just how successful this has been.
Because we are not a computer system, we don't have a specific volume of trading recorded, but by the grapevine, by phone surveys, and over the years watching the money move, we were able to guess very reliably that several million dollars equivalent of this money has transacted over those years, making loans without charging interest up to $30,000 value, which is the fundamental monetary revolution in our system, then as well making grants of the money to over 100 community organizations. So it has had a powerful cultural benefit, even greater, I think, than the millions of dollars equivalent value transacted.
Well, that is the important point. Of course, what this money does is unlock the power of the community, which does want to trade and transact with each other, but sometimes can't for the lack of pieces of paper money floating around. So I think this is a revolutionary idea on so many levels. And you've written about the way that this could be not only implemented in other communities, obviously, but the way that it could be used as a national sort of gold standard. For example, you wrote an article called Labor, the New Gold Standard, which is available on your website, paulglover.org. Tell us about that idea and how you see that happening in the future.
I have been encouraging, of course, over the years that every community start its own credit system of one kind or another. Electronic credit systems are more prevalent than they were 21 years ago, before even email. But I think that given that all national currencies are in debt in nature, all of our human economies, nearly all of them, particularly on a national scale, are extracting from nature faster than we are replenishing, undermining civilization, undermining life, not only human life, but all other forms of life as well. So the our system, the our denomination, gets us off of, or is potentially capable of getting us off of, that national currency treadmill, and particularly one which is backed by speculation, by air, by less than nothing, by trillions of dollars of national debt, and puts us back onto a sounder money footing, money backed by real goods, real services, real commodities. And to multiply or magnify the local currency process on the scale, to the scale of an entire nation or continent, even eventually on a global scale, I think can put us on that path of reconnecting the local networks into regional networks and national, continental, and global networks of real people and real value that enable us to create economies that are more responsive to the capacities and tolerances of nature and of ourselves as individuals and communities.
Well, one of the things that I find particularly inspiring about this is that it is not a system that requires someone to switch over completely and 100% all at once. It's something that can be used as a complementary currency. Can you speak to that the power of this as a way of transitioning off onto something quite different, as opposed to simply dropping all our dollars overnight?
It's certainly more flexible than waving a magic wand from above on high, or from among the grassroots in a revolutionary manner, a conventional revolutionary manner. It says, here's an invitation to new pathways and new possibilities. And here is a tool, local currency, or a nationally denominated our currency, that enables us to make choices in directions that enable us to meet our personal, family, community, and planetary needs in ways that are more constructive.
Let's talk about the inflation problem that unfortunately creeps up in so many currencies. And I note that you don't use demurrage stamps or anything of that sort in Ithaca Hours. Tell us about how you keep inflation under control.
In every community, there's a certain theoretical maximum amount of money that would be needed in order to transact all the legitimate needs, however you would define those, that any given community might have. And you can make a line at the top of the graph about that. It might rise or fade with the population and its perceived desires. But then you have dollars, which are, or any national currency, circulating in a community beyond the control of that community, and which obvious to anyone within a community who would like to have a weekly massage but can't afford it, who would like to have two or three restaurant meals a week but can't afford it, to anybody who can't afford something either basic or pleasurable, there is a need for more money, at least in their pocket. And if, on the scale of the community, there were more money circulating, more fairly, better distributed for the priorities of meeting the needs of people in general, why then you would have enough money. But if it went over that top line, more money in the community than people had time or inclination to make use of, well, then you have too much money in the system. That's inflation. And within a local currency system, the sound of inflation is any individual person saying, I have more of this money than I know what to do with. And so, and your question is extremely important, this it's a subtler idea of inflation than just a theorem that a user at Blackboard would write and require people to memorize. It has much more subtly to do with how much money is perceived to be enough. And so my job as a networker within the Ithaca system was extensively to go around and make sure that the people who were earning a bunch of it were very happy spending it. That they learned gradually more and more varied ways to spend it. They weren't dumping it all in one place. They were spending it widely and diversely. They were making new friends, new political allies, and maybe lovers, who knows. But that is a main task in order to make sure that the money is circulating fairly, satisfactorily, to be that troubleshooter, that network in a community. And that will bounce back to this idea of inflation. And making sure that the money is circulating is the best kind of demurrage, I think, instead of imposing penalties on people and making the money harder to use, even the national currencies, which are already losing value through inflation, by knocking on doors and say, how is it doing? And offering incentives and having a better time and an easier time for the family, the friends, and the business by spending the money.
Well, all of this is quite overwhelming, I think, for people who might be starting to think about how they can implement this in their own local area. And for those people, you have quite literally written the book on how to do this. Again, I'll mention your book, Hometown Money, How to Enrich Your Community with Local Currency. And you have just released a new expanded second edition for 2013. So perhaps you can tell people about what that book and some of the things that it talks about.
There are many books about local currency and that it's a good idea and why people should do it. My book, Hometown Money, is combining, of course, those philosophical fundamentals, but is focused especially on nuts and bolts considerations. And I lay it out step by step. I slice and dice it, cut it, and present it in various kinds of ways, everything from stacks of paragraphs to cartoons, and whatever catches people's best recall of this information is available to them in any style they prefer. And in it, in this latest edition, I emphasize lessons learned from the communities that began local currencies following Ithaca's example that faded, and those that succeeded, and why some have faded, and some others have done very well. The very prime, pivotal lesson learned is that the reason the Ithaca system became gigantic and the other systems sustain is because they have someone who is a paid networker. That is to say, starting a local currency is not just a fascinating, fun idea, it's also sustained effort. So it's like starting a community institution, a food co-op, a credit union, or a business. So a local currency is a non-profit enterprise. It requires that someone be reliably there on the street. A local currency can't be administered by a board of directors meeting monthly, talking about local currency and inquiring in general how is it going, but that information and that prompting has to be daily. So it's just like any national currency has an army of brokers constantly pushing, promoting, facilitating, and troubleshooting circulation of the money. A local currency, likewise, needs at least one broker, I call it a networker, out there constantly learning about the circulation of the money, encouraging more people and businesses to join in the fun. And I think it's a wonderful job. I had the greatest time of my life meeting thousands of people I otherwise would not have met across the political spectrum, people I otherwise would not have intersected with culturally, conservative, liberal, indifferent, and everything else beyond and in between. I met him in a rich experience socially for me, and connected them to each other on the basis of something in common they could, through which they could come to respect one another, even if they had vast cultural or political differences otherwise. There yet again is a contribution of local currency and local trade that respects local capability that is even greater than the millions of dollars of this currency they can't transact.
Well, I think we would be hard-pressed to think of anything that could bring people from different parts of the spectrum together more than a currency that helps to unlock their productive and buying power. I mean, I think that's something that obviously unites everyone. So it is great to have that kind of step-by-step guide. And I know you also have several other books available, including Deep Green Jobs, How to Take Power, Health Democracy. Tell us about some of your other work.
Over the decades, I have intruded into various fields without waiting for the requisite degree to reinterpret the institutions of society through the lens of ecology and social justice. And after decades, or after many years, like many of us, griping and being angry, and in fact I became quite effective at putting an end to things that I was against, at least on a local and regional scale, I found it ultimately more rewarding and fun and ultimately more powerful to set the pace by creating models that prove the practicability of new ways to manage our societies that replenished nature and introduced us to one another in a more friendly way as an alternative to war, which is an ultimate extension of social dysfunction, and of scramble and competition for natural resources. So I have had much gratification starting organizations that deal with food, fuel, housing, healthcare, planning, education, transportation, finance, that prove the capability and duty of people in general, instead of waiting around for a national government, instead of waiting around for a stock market to fix things for us, we take control and we set the pace and we keep them busy following our example. And our example, in fact, by contrast with their failures, requires them to meet new standards. And so the books that I've written are based on those experiences. They are very much how-to, and of course they give all great honor to those organizations and initiatives that have inspired me. So millions and millions and millions of people around the world, and in modest ways, billions of people, goodwill and good action are pulling together a world that's getting better at the same time that it's getting worse. And if our media would feature the wonderful things that people are doing instead of the stupidest thing that we people are doing, why, momentum, I think, would start to move in that direction, in a better direction.
Well, Paul Glover, for anyone who is out there right now on the fence thinking about getting into their local community currency or perhaps even starting one of their own, do you have any words of encouragement or advice for people out there who are just thinking about this and want to know more about how this actually can work?
Well, wherever you are, there are other people who feel somewhat as you do, and you find them. You create a simple process and program, readily understandable, and you begin with the people who are ready to begin, whether it is one person, five, or eight. You begin, and you blow on that ember, and it becomes a flame. If it is meant to be, I call it a community magic act. I've had wonderful ideas that people have thought were dumb, and maybe they were. But I far prefer to risk taking those actions and making a fool of myself than trying to content myself with merely griping. The human condition is what we make of it, and we're all a piece of it, and we're all beautiful in some ways and incapable in others, and we put together whatever we can do, and wonderful things are happening around the world. So I encourage people, when they are trying to figure out what to do, is start with something, and start with someone, themselves, and whoever the hell they can grab hold of, who agrees with them that there needs to be a solution.
Well, those are certainly words of advice, and I hope people will take them to heart. Once again, your work can be found at paulglover.org, and I will put that link in the show notes so that people can find out more about Paul and his work. So, Paul, thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Thank you, sir, as well. Good talking to you.